Hey guys, this is Mike Mahaffey, the old bastard BJJ guy, here for BJJ Metal Models. Back in my day, we had to walk uphill in the snow both ways to get to the academy just to learn some crappy technique from a random purple belt. You kids have it so easy, because now you can just subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium and get tons of great audio courses to learn new techniques, enhance your mindset, and entertain yourself. You can even get personalized rolling reviews from some of your favorite BJJ Metal Models coaches, including me. It's like having your own seminar, you spoiled little whippersnappers. So what are you waiting for? Subscribe to BJJ Metal Models Premium right now, get off my lawn, and go train.
Welcome to BJJ Mental Models, episode 244. I'm Steve Kwan. BJJ Mental Models is your guide to a conceptual and intelligent jiu-jitsu approach. And today, happy to be joined by Shanti Abelia. How's it going, Shanti?
I'm good, thank you. I just came home last night from a little jiu-jitsu training camp in Croatia. So always a great opportunity to mix great training with good weather and good food and some a nice beach time.
The longer I train, I've started to develop better relationships and better networking with people on the other side of the globe there. I'm here in Canada. And man, I'm kind of jealous because over in Europe and Asia, there's this really cool burgeoning, growing jiu-jitsu scene. And I keep seeing all of these photos of people doing these amazing training camps and castles and on islands and stuff. And I'm always jealous.
Yeah, we have, by now, we have so many amazing training camps in Europe, especially over the summer, where it's a really good way to combine holidays and some, relaxed time, but also to improve your jiu-jitsu skill. There's a lot of great, both local European coaches, but also some of the bigger names from Brazil and the US that often hold their camps here. So I can definitely recommend that as a good experience for you to come over and, yeah, and join in and get sauce.
Definitely want to do that. But hey, before we go too much further, why don't you give yourself a quick introduction just so everyone knows who we're talking to?
Yeah. Oh, that's always the quick introduction. That's always the hard part, I feel. My name is Shanti Abelia. I'm originally Brazilian. I am based out of Copenhagen, Denmark. My Brazilian jiu-jitsu is not very Brazilian, because actually I left Brazil when I was 4 years old. I grew up in England, in the US actually, and have been in Denmark for about 25 years, where I also have my base in jiu-jitsu. I have competed a fair bit throughout my career. I have five IBJJF titles in the colored belt and then black belt masters, and I have 6 medals from adult Black Belt World Championships.
That's awesome.
So those are some of the older results, and I'm not that young anymore. So 5 years ago, I opened my own jiu-jitsu gym. So I'm probably, I think, one of the, maybe 5 or 6 other names in the world of gyms that are female-only led, as in not that we only have female students, but I am the sole owner, head coach, and manager of the gym called Hive BJJ. And all this I've done as my side gig. So I have a full-time business career currently in management consulting. So if those of you don't know what that is, I help other companies get in shape, just like in jiu-jitsu we get in shape. I help companies get in shape by improving their performance, maximizing their potential, through leveraging people, processes, data, and technology. So that's what I actually do. And then the jiu-jitsu is just fun.
That's funny because it sounds very relatable to me. I've said so many times on the podcast here, for me, jiu-jitsu kind of started as a hobby and it's very much become an ingrained part of my life. But unlike a lot of people, it's not my full-time job. I'm not a gym owner or a full-time instructor or anything like that. For me, jiu-jitsu is that third place I go after work or on the weekends to get some exercise and see my friends and, you know, just have some fun. And a topic that you had discussed, which is very near and dear to my heart, is how do you continually develop skill and get better when you just don't have that much time to put onto the mats? When I was younger, it was a lot easier to put a ton of time onto the mats. I remember at some point I was basically going to the gym twice a day, 7 days a week, because I just didn't have anything better to do. But being older now, having responsibilities, having my own side gigs and things I do on the side, having kids and family obligations, I just can't train like that anymore. You know, your life priorities change as you get older too. And I'm lucky these days if I can get to the gym twice a week to do jiu-jitsu. So something that you talked about is how to accelerate your learning and develop skill when you're not the person who's living in the gym like the pros are. And I definitely want to unpack this because I know our audience has a lot of hobbyists. And I know that probably most of them are sick of getting beat up by the jiu-jitsu full-timers. So definitely I want to explore this topic with you and learn your method.
Yeah, for sure. And for me, this is not a question of learning or getting better at jiu-jitsu with limited time, because imagine even if you had all the time in the world, how much better you could be if you were good at getting good. You know what I mean? So I think there's also still a lot of untapped potential by full-time athletes in the way they train to make themselves better. So for me, it's all in one. And like you know, you mentioned you also have this is your side gig. And for me, the way I approach getting better at something, improving my skill, whether it is at work or whether it is helping others at work or whether it is on the mat, regardless of how much time I have, there's certain methodology to it. And that's what I think could be interesting to talk a little bit about today. And also with your background and everything you have, and all the people you've talked to and everything you know and your BJJ mental models work, I'm also super excited to hear your take and bounce these ideas off you and see what you think.
Well, let's do it. By all means, let's get going. So unpack the method. And I guess the first question I have is, how much of this stuff is specific to sport development or things that are only applicable to jiu-jitsu versus things that you actually picked up from the day job or picked up from other areas of life? I mean, management consulting is a field that is very much about high-level strategy. And I would love to know, you know, is this stuff applicable or generalizable to other domains, or is this stuff just something that's only relevant to jiu-jitsu?
No, this is relevant to everything. And by now, like, this is how I approach pretty much everything that I want to improve in my life, whether it be for myself, whether it be for the companies I've worked with, whether it be in my gym or with my students. So this is a general, let's call it a general methodology for skill building through creativity, experimentation, and scientific thinking.
That's fantastic. All right, let's hear about it then. I want to hear.
So actually the methodology has a name, and the name is kata. So kata we can all relate to, as what we don't have so much of is in jiu-jitsu, because most people, when they think of a kata, you know, they think of karate and karate kid and people doing these sequences, hitting and kicking out in the air, right? But kata, actually, if you go back to the origins of the word, I'm no Japanese expert, but to at least to the origins of the translated word, it's a system of training exercises, or it's a training pattern. So this methodology, in essence, is a training pattern. It's a pattern of skill building. So this, I hope it doesn't get, like, you know, when I'm getting too philosophical here, a little too early, but this is a layer you put on top of whatever you're doing. So just as you're learning a technique, this is a pattern of learning that has to be learned to be able to learn efficiently, or basically not just learning, but also improving. It ties into a lot of the, you know, a lot of the other learning models you cover on the BJJ Mental Models website. It incorporates a lot of things around deliberate practice. It incorporates a lot of things around Kaizen, around growth mindset, and all these other things. But it puts it into a methodology and a framework.
Interesting. And so just to confirm, this is, again, not a martial arts specific thing, but it's just a general practice method that I guess you can apply to anything, right?
Yes, it's a general practice method and actually comes from the business world. Some of you who may work a little bit in business may have heard of something called, you know, lean methodology, which comes from the car making company originally Toyota, which is about making processes and businesses more efficient and effective. At some point, people started trying to copy all that into the Western world, failed horrendously because they were basically copying techniques. So they were basically looking at, you know, looking at the instructional of the technique. So looking at what is Toyota doing and then trying to copy that one-to-one to a Western setting. And most companies, not all, but most failed or have struggled very hard to do this. Then researchers started to look at what lies beyond the techniques. So if we draw a parallel from jiu-jitsu and back into the business world, what is the concept behind the technique? And when they looked at what Toyota was doing, the concept behind their success was the way that they as a company learned and did skill building. So skill building targeted performance.
Yeah, this is something that is very relevant to my day job as well. I've said so many times in the past, I work in computer software. And so talking about lean methodologies is very, very common within that industry.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely. It's also something that has been botched tremendously because much like you see in jiu-jitsu, rather than employing any degree of critical thinking, sometimes people will just look at what other people have done and try to copy it exactly. Also in the software world, there's a term that we use for this. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it on your side of the pond there, but we call it cargo culting. And the idea is that you're basically, rather than trying to really understand what's going on, you're duplicating what someone else is doing, and you're just really copycatting it effectively. The name allegedly comes from the practice of some indigenous tribes who, I think it was, the story was during World War II, they'd received supply drops from cargo planes from, I think it was the Allies, I'm not sure who exactly. And then when all of the planes left, they kind of got into the habit of almost worshiping those planes, and they thought that if they built their own little mock planes, they would come back and deliver more cargo to them. So they were trying to copy what they'd seen that worked in the past without truly understanding it. And so that I think is a really interesting observation here. That can very much be something that happens in jiu-jitsu as well. You see this a lot when you see white belts arguing about what Danaher says and what Gordon says, right? And they're not really deploying any critical thought there. They're just kind of parroting what they've been told. So that is something that you see, I think, in all levels of life. And a part of mastery is learning the process to really understand why things work rather than just copying what people tell you.
Exactly. And I see that essentially both in jiu-jitsu, but also in businesses, there's a tendency for people to be on two ends. Of course, I'm generalizing a lot here, on two ends of a spectrum. One end is you just do random stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you see a random technique on Instagram and then you kind of try and throw that in, or, you know, you just build your game as a set of random techniques and you don't have any thought process or methodology around how you build your game and how you improve your jiu-jitsu. Then on the other side, you have, you know, the groupies. You download and watch every single instructional by, you know, whoever you're fanboying at the moment. And then you diligently watch every second, every minute of that instructional, and then you try and drill it, and then you try and do exactly as you've drilled in sparring. And in reality, I think none of those two ends of the spectrum is optimal, because one, you're just blindly copying something, and the other one, you're just blindly doing something random. So you have to find a way, of course, to take what knowledge there is. You know, there is so much good knowledge out there today that there's no reason to ignore that. But apply it in a way that works for you and learn how to apply it and learn some critical thinking in how to apply things and what to apply.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. So, I mean, let's apply this to the jiu-jitsu sense then. How do we get started here? What is the best way, especially if you're new to this sport or even if you've been training for a few years, but you still know you have a lot to learn? What would that process look like in practice?
So there's, you know, there's four general steps to this kata methodology. Which sound super easy, but, you know, the devil's in the detail and the devil is in the practice of it. Again, it's practicing how to practice things. The first step is that you define a vision, right? whether your vision is competition related, as in, you know, I want to win a big one of the major tournaments, or whether your vision is, I just want to have my passing game feel really good in training. You know, it doesn't really matter. That vision has to be a little bit, has to be far out enough that it's difficult for you to grasp, right? So it's not, your vision is not, oh, I have to learn this one move. So it has to be time-wise, but also imagination and ambition-wise, a little bit further out than you're comfortable with. Because we all know if we set up visions and goals and targets for ourselves that are outside our comfort zone, then usually that's also where we grow the most, right? So it starts with that. Then within that, you can get into, you know, all this goal-setting ways. You know, you can set up a SMART goal, you know, specific, measurable, ambitious, all that. Or you can say, look, I'm just going to start with, you know, I want something like this. Because sometimes part of your process in improving and skill building is also understanding what is it you actually want, and that's okay. So personally, you know, like I said, I've used this to build and improve on a lot of things, including my own gym. When I started my gym, Hive, 5 years ago exactly, I did not start with a vision of it, okay, in 5 years, we're going to be 150 students and it's going to be running like this and I'm going to have this many classes a week and so on. But I had a feeling of where I wanted to go. And I knew that that was far away from where I was today or back then, which was having nothing. And then, you know, starting with 4 students, three classes a week. So it's okay, I think, sometimes to start things a little bit fluffy, you know, on the vision and the long-term side. And then slowly on the way there, you kind of become clear on what is it you actually want.
Right. Makes sense. Now, man, this is something that I really want to unpack here because I love this type of conversation.
This is step one.
I know. Well, look, when we talk about making a vision, how do you do that? That's always a question that I want to explore here because many times, especially in jiu-jitsu, I ask people this all the time, like, what are your goals? What is your dream in the sport? And people will say things like, I want to be a world champion. Okay, cool. You want to be a world champion. That's not really a vision though, right? I mean, I guess maybe it kind of is, but at least in the business world, when you define a vision, there are specific parameters around what that should look like. It's not just a wish or a goal. There's a very specific way of doing that. So what does a good vision look like versus just a goal or a pie in the sky wish? Like, how can you define a good vision for yourself in grappling?
Well, if I had to bring it back to this kata methodology, actually, this first step is not really vision, I'm just vision because it's sometimes easier for people to grasp a bit. But they call it, and this is pretty cool, it's actually called a challenge. And I like this term because a challenge sounds kind of not as fluffy as a vision, right? It sounds kind of cool. It's like, oh, you know, who's not up for a challenge? Everyone's up for a challenge. And the definition of that is something that is, like I said, out in the future, let's say 1-3 year horizon, probably, or, you know, it's good if it has some kind of measure to it. So when have you achieved your challenge, right? When have you completed your challenge in some way? But that's where I'm saying that I think that sometimes it's less important to know exactly what that vision or what that challenge looks like, but have that be part of the process in getting there. So, yeah, what is a good vision or what is a good challenge? I like to describe things in terms of, because we're within this improvement and skill building framework, I like to describe it as, what does great look like?
Got it. Okay, so what would some examples be then?
What does great look like for you? Great can look like, and the thing is, great, when you say what does great look like, it can also, you can also have some pretty soft things attached to it, right? Because you can say, well, great looks for me looks like standing on top of the podium, no matter the cost. So for me, what does great look like also has the holistic view to it, because it can also be, well, it's what great looks like is standing on top of the podium at a big competition where, yes, I've had to sacrifice a lot for it, but I still have my friends and family and I'm not a douchebag. You know, like, yeah, but you can incorporate values into it, which I think is kind of cool. Because sometimes also people set these, you know, you can also risk setting these extremely measurable, hardcore goals as some kind of vision, but losing yourself along the way. And we're talking, when talking about jiu-jitsu, or even when talking about other things, you know, it's important to have that aspect with you, because you're still a person, you're a person going there. So there's going to be other things that matter to you, whether it's your values or whether it's, you know, other commitments in life that matter to you. And for me, that's also part of your point of a goal setting. And if we're talking, especially if we're talking about people on a recreational hobby level, you're going to have to take that into consideration when setting up your vision or your challenge for jiu-jitsu. Because you can't say, oh, I want to stand there on top of the podium and it doesn't matter if I have to quit my job and leave my family to do so. Then you're not, you know, you're not a recreational hobbyist anymore. But you can still say, hey, I want to stand on top of this podium at a big competition, or I want to be on the podium at a big competition, but respecting other things in my life as well. And that's going to be part of your journey, understanding how to make that happen. I don't think that was a good answer to your question, but
I think it was great. I love how you brought up that it's not just about setting your goal, but it's about adding parameters. Like, I want to be a world champion no matter the cost, because I think that kind of nuanced thinking is something that a lot of people don't really consider when it comes to goal setting. They think about what they want, but they don't think about the price of admission to get there. We've talked to a lot of people on the podcast who have had, as you can imagine, very pointed opinions on this. I mean, Travis Stevens, Olympic silver medalist in judo, had said that for many people, probably most people, he would not suggest going down the life path that he went down, because even though it worked out well for him, for most people, the cost just isn't worth it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? that's completely understandable.
Yeah.
So I thought it was very interesting that he brought that up and he mentioned this. Let's maybe unpack the next step, I guess. I definitely want to hear more about how we go from there. Because, yeah, sure. I'm very interested in this aspect now of, okay, we've got the goal, but what does the process look like to actually achieve that versus just showing at the gym 10 times a week?
So just last little comment on this goal setting. And again, it's now bringing it back to business. So in most or pretty much all business settings, when you work with goal settings, you don't only work in one parameter. You work always in a minimum of three. You always work on delivery. So delivery, that is, I want to be on top of the podium. You work with your cost. What do I have of resources that I can use to get there? So this is the part, am I giving everything up to do it or not? And in business, you also work with a quality parameter, which in jiu-jitsu, yeah, what could that be? Quality can also be something about what kind of style of jiu-jitsu do I want when I'm there? You know, am I going to be the, well, I won by an advantage, so I won. Goals done and delivered? Or is there a stylistic aspect to, hey, I want to have really cool looking jiu-jitsu? That could be a quality parameter. So for me, it's common sense that when you do your goal setting and you put and you formulate your ambitions and things like that, that does have more than one parameter, isn't it? And quality, cost, delivery, these are like the bare minimum parameters of in business now. Nowadays, you also always, most of the time, also have some kind of people aspect. Like, hey, are we going to feel good along the way or not? You know, you have a sustainability aspect in many businesses as well. So, yeah, I think it's it should be a given that you have to consider these things in your in setting your ambitions and goals and challenges. Okay, that was step one. Next step is looking at where you are now and understanding where you are now. And again, we're gonna stay a little bit with this parameter talk, because that's why also it was important to to wrap that up in a good way in step one, defining your challenge or ambition. Because understanding where you are now is not a question of understanding, oh, well, I lost the first round in my, or I lost in the first fight in my last competition. That only covers one parameter. So understanding now is actually understanding the conditions that you are in now. So that's everything around the parameters. That's everything around how you train. So here you would map out, you know, how often are you training, but you would also map out how good is the quality of the training you're getting. You know, how, what are your, you'd also map out, am I even, am I resting enough? Am I getting enough nutrition in? So where am I today around anything that is related to this? That would be your second step in is understanding your current conditions.
So this kind of self-reflection here, is this something that you generally recommend people do on their own, or is it helpful? I mean, you, of course, are a management consultant in this area. So during your day job, people bring you in for that outside perspective. Is this something that is often best done with the help of an outside perspective, or is it something that people can relatively harmlessly do by themselves?
That's a good question. It depends on your level of self-reflection. Yeah, I mean, on the one hand, it's always good to have a coach, you know, not just a jiu-jitsu coach, but a coach around things like this to, or a friend to bounce ideas off, because other people, no matter how good you are at self-reflecting, how good you are at understanding yourself and things around you, people are all around you always have a slightly different perspective, whether they know you or not. You know, some people just have that ability to ask those super annoying questions or point those things out that you don't want to hear.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that I think is where having a coach or a mentor can come into play, yeah. Right? It can be hard to do. I know a lot of people don't like making themselves vulnerable and showing the side of themselves and kind of exposing both what's good and bad about with their personal self-assessment. People kind of have this natural tendency to try to conceal the bad. This happens a lot actually on our premium rolling review service where, I mean, people get life-changing and game-changing benefit out of submitting videos to our team for review. But for many people, the hardest barrier is just getting them to do it in the first place because they're afraid to, right? They don't want to record themselves rolling, especially if they're not just wrecking shop and winning all the time. And they don't want to have a professional high-level black belt take a look at that and give feedback. People are kind of afraid to do that. And that kind of fear is very self-limiting, but we do see it all the time. So for me, kind of one of the things that we're always trying to do is we're trying to explain to people that you've got to get over that fear, because just like how you were probably terrified the first time you showed up to jiu-jitsu, once you get over that fear and you show that vulnerability, it allows people to help you fix those weaknesses. And you can't do that if you're trying to hide your weaknesses all the time.
People who have, now I'm going to be very direct. I'm a fairly direct person. I try to be sometimes diplomatic and sometimes I just cannot be. Like, if you have that mentality, you're just not going to get better very fast in general at stuff. Because if you have that mentality, that also shows that you're not going to be the one trying new things in training because you don't want to mess up and get your guard passed. So just by someone saying, oh, I'm afraid to film or send my videos in to someone who's good to look at it, to get feedback and get help, already that tells me that you're not even ready to receive help, actually, and you don't want it. If you look pretty much throughout business, throughout jiu-jitsu, people who get really good, they all have mentors, they all know and understand their mistakes, and they're not afraid of them. Because you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And actually, this whole methodology, we'll get to it. And the last step is about making mistakes. So, your listeners, if you don't want to make mistakes, this is not for you. I hope I didn't now everyone will tune out.
No, I mean, this is something we've talked about many, many times on the podcast. Josh Waitzkin, the author of The Art of Learning, has called this investing in loss. Willingness to put yourself in a bad situation so that you can get better. Jiu-jitsu itself is a great example of that. I mean, it is interesting to me that sometimes people are afraid to show their vulnerability while at the same time they're willing to train jiu-jitsu, because jiu-jitsu in a lot of ways is the ultimate example of being vulnerable. You're going to get your ass kicked a lot, especially when you first start. So in order to even get to blue belt in jiu-jitsu, you have to at least be willing to look bad in front of other people to some extent. That's, I think, part of the reason why people always claim that jiu-jitsu can make you humble. I don't know to what extent I truly agree with that, but I think there is some truth to that argument in that sense. So I think that it is definitely a requirement. And I mean, I would say this to anyone out there, if you're one of the people on premium and you're not using the rolling review service, like really you should. You absolutely definitely should start submitting stuff there, and you will be shocked at how quickly that level of feedback changes your game. It's just something that not enough people, I think, are willing to approach, because there's always an excuse, right? There's always, well, I just don't want to show my weaknesses like that. I'm not comfortable. Or sometimes people will put the locus of control on someone else and they'll say, well, that's not normal behavior in my gym, and I don't think my coach will like it if we record footage. And people, when they say that, I know they didn't ask permission or anything. They're just no. assuming, right? They're looking for an excuse.
Yeah.
And you will see this in the business world as well, where people will make a ton of excuses for why they can't change, or they'll always have reasons for why they have weaknesses or vulnerabilities or why mistakes were made. But sometimes you have to lean into those mistakes. You can't fix a problem if you're always trying to paper over it and make it look like it doesn't exist.
No, exactly. And in the end, your successes will come from fixing your mistakes, basically.
Yeah.
Success is just like troubleshooting and problem solving all the time.
So let's walk through the next step here now. What is the third step now of the model here? What does this look like?
So next step is you establish, again, we're putting it in terms of different parameters, right? So we had the current condition as a second step. The third step is you establish what we call a target condition. So this is a target on the way to your big ambition or challenge or vision. And again, it's a target condition. So it's not just, oh, my big ambition is to win, be at the podium at one of the major tournaments. So my target condition is to do it at a smaller tournament. No, we're still around all these different parameters of what does it look like when I'm there? Not just what it looks like when I'm there, but what does the conditions around it that made it happen look like? So if it is something around winning a medaling at a smaller tournament, let's say in a few months, it would be like, okay, then I've been present in my training 3 times a week. I've been mentally present in my training 3 times a week. Some people are just on the mats. Some people are not mentally there. They're just physically there. I've followed my nutrition. I've slept well. I've done my strength and conditioning. So it's everything that it takes to reach my goal. So again, this also requires some reflection about what does that look like? What does it look like to be there? What kind of life do I have to be able to reach that small goal? It can also be, now we're just talking about, you know, winning tournaments, but you can also use this to improve some area of your game. Let's say you have a really good guard, but you have 0 top game. So maybe you have your step one, you know, a big ambition or vision would be to, hey, I just want to be really, really good on top. Then your target condition could be, I want to feel the first, and this can be like, okay, the first step is, okay, I feel comfortable enough on top to not get swept by lower belts, for example. That could be a first step on the way to being good on top, right? First, you need to learn how to defend and not get swept before you start passing. So that can also be a target condition. So it's just to show that this can be used in a variety of scenarios. I use this when the jiu-jitsu wise, yeah, so jiu-jitsu wise last year, I competed. I hadn't competed for about 3 years. And I like to, you know, I've won Masters Europeans, like, I don't know, I think with last year, I'm up to about 10 times or 11 in gi and no gi. And I like to challenge myself. I didn't want to just, if I was going to compete last year, I was like, I don't want to just go in and compete to win. I want to compete. I want a target condition. I want it to look different. I want it to feel different. I want to do something different. It's no secret that I have never been very great at stand-up. So last year, my ambition was to get better at throws and stand-up part in Gi and Inoki. So that was, an overall yearly ambition for me. And one of my target conditions was then that I wanted to score points from standing at Europeans in Gi and Inoki. First I did in Gi, and then so one target condition was for Gi, and then one target condition was for Inoki. So target condition for me was not I want to win Europeans. A target condition was I want to ensure that I get takedown points. And that for me was actually more important than winning.
Got it. Now, here's something I want to unpack here. We've talked a lot before about process-based goals versus outcome-based goals.
Yeah.
I guess the example here that you could give is a process-based goal would be like you talked about earlier, which is, hey, I just want to get better at mount. Whereas an outcome-based goal would be, I want to win a medal at this tournament. And there's pros and cons to each of these things, right? I would want to get your feedback on whether one of these is inherently better in some way than the other, or whether you need some combination of the two. And the reason I bring it up is because we've always said on the podcast, and I know this is very common advice, that you should prioritize building and executing good habits over the pursuit of results. Because results can't always be controlled, right? You might go into a tournament doing everything properly and sprain your ankle in the first 5 seconds and lose, right? There's all sorts of things beyond your control that can impact things. And if your sense of identity is too caught up in the pursuit of results, you can wind up being just completely crushed when you never achieve the result that you want. And because again, sometimes it's just luck and randomness. You can't always control things. So it's often good to prioritize the process. However, I think you do actually need concrete goals, right? I mean, I'm not telling people that you should never set a goal to be a champion, right? That's an outcome-based goal. I think it's still good to have those, but how do you balance those? Like, how do you balance when to focus on the process versus when to focus on a measurable result that you want to achieve, which understandably you may never achieve, right? How do you balance those two?
For me, it's about having both. So when, and that's also back to this Kata methodology and target condition. The target condition is both an outcome and a process. So the outcome is I want to get takedown points at a competition. The process is if I want to do that, I'd better actually be training my takedowns. Right? So the process, the part of my target condition is to be able to get there. That means I will be regularly drilling my takedowns. I will be regularly from sparring, starting, standing, and not pulling guard. And I can make a process-based goal around saying, okay, if I want to score points at Europeans off a takedown, I can say I need to do this for, I need to drill and train in a certain way and do things in a certain way for X number of weeks. That would be my process-based goal. And then I have to have a belief that, okay, if I do this for X number of weeks, there is a certain probability that I will be able to get my outcome, which is takedown points in competition. So for me, the two things go together because I think it's important to have a reason or a why are you doing this in a specific way. So what, the process has to give you something. So you have to set up your process to give you something. So what is it you want that process to give you? You can also just say, yeah, a process-based goal is to train 3 times a week. Yeah, great. But that's that end of the spectrum that I was talking about, that, okay, you're training 3 times a week, but you're just showing up and doing random stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So for me, the two are it's super important to have them interchange. But I also agree that the outcome can vary because there are a lot of other things that can go into it. Like, yeah, you can step on the mat and injure your ankle or whatever. So you should, as a person, as an athlete, as a business person, and I do this, I coach, I do a lot of executive coaching. I always, always have to help many top-level leaders and managers see that they need to trust their process and they need to ask whether their organization is following the process and not just ask about the outcome.
It's interesting you bring that up. We did and actually we're continuing to expand on this BJJ Mental Models premium series we did with Nick Perler, a wrestling coach from Perler Wrestling Academy in Missouri. And one of the pieces of advice that he gives to his competitors is to keep two sets of records. And what he's basically advising is that one of those sets of records is your actual win-loss competition record. So what did you win? What are your main accomplishments? What are your awards? But then the other record is your development versus your goals. So this might not necessarily be anything that anyone other than you would even ever know about, but just goals like, hey, I just want to be better at this position, or so-and-so beat me last time. Look, I want to put on a really good showing and make sure that they don't beat me by a certain amount of points. So it's not necessarily tied to winning or losing, but it's tied to your progression. How much better are you versus the last time you tried something?
Yes. I love it.
Yeah, so I love that idea of having two sets of records, your actual competitive win-loss record, but then your self-development record as well, because then you're always winning, regardless of whether or not you won or lost the match on any given day.
Yes, exactly.
Nice. Okay, so we got all of that in place. What's the next step of this kata thing? And by the way, I should also ask, and I guess we can get near the end, if people want to learn more about this method, where can they actually go about and do that?
If you Google Toyota kata, a lot of stuff will come up, but again, it's 100%. In a business setting that you'll find it described.
Got it. Okay, I'll try to dig up some good links and put them in the show notes for people
as
well.
I can find something. but yeah, otherwise people are always welcome to get in touch with me and have a chat if I ever touch them.
Awesome. So what's the next step of the process then?
So the next and last step is basically you then experiment towards your target condition. So let's say you know that your target condition, so your process goal in this, to get the two takedown points is that, okay, I have to find some takedowns that actually work for me. And I have to find out how I find more time for drilling takedowns. That could be because there's a reason why your process is not like that today. So there's a reason why I'm not drilling takedowns three times a week and not starting from standing in all my rounds. So every outcome has a process, and every target outcome and target process has some obstacles or some reasons why you're not there yet. And those are the ones you then have to figure out and say, okay, what am I going to try and do to make this better? So on the technical side, it could be like, okay, I need to let me find 2-3 takedowns and start experimenting with them. On the structural side, as in, you know, okay, I have to schedule in more drilling sessions. Let's see if I put them in at the end of class. How does that work? Now, the thing is, and this is why the cool part about, there's both a creativity element to this. So there's both a like, okay, what am I going to do to try and figure this, do things differently? Because in essence, everything about skill building is about trying to do things a little bit differently or a little bit better. Together with the structured approach, which is I have to force myself to evaluate this. Is it working or is it not working? So if I find 2 or 3 takedowns and I drill them and I drill them and I drill them and I can feel it's just not working for me in sparring, maybe those are not the two takedowns I should be doing. Maybe I need to find something else. If I try to drill, do some extra drilling at the end of class, and I find out, yeah, okay, I went through the motions, I did it, but it didn't make me better because I was actually too tired, I'll have to change that. So I have to constantly evaluate, am I, what I'm doing, is it getting me closer to my process and my outcome? And it sounds super easy to do, but it's actually quite difficult, because this is where you have to be willing to try stuff out that might not work, and you also have to find a balance So this is where you are going to fail. It's called an experiment. You're supposed to experiment and find out, does it work, does it not work? If it doesn't work, you have to be willing to say, okay, didn't work, try something new. Why didn't it work? What can I try that's going to make it better? So you have to be willing to go there and try stuff that may or may not work. And you have to find the right balance between being stubborn and understanding when this just is not working, right? So, of course, maybe if you drill something twice, that's not quite enough for you to see if that technique's good for you or not. But if you've been drilling, you know, if you've been drilling it consistently for several weeks and you're still not getting it to work a single time in sparring, then maybe you just need to find another technique that's better suited to you.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. A lot of what you're talking about here is this pursuit of continuous improvement and progress. Now, you'd already talked about Kaizen earlier. In our industries, Kaizen, like you said, it's this concept that came originally from Toyota's lean manufacturing system. But the idea is it's less about creating some giant plan so that you hit the exact deliverable on the exact date that you intended. And it's more about just making sure that you're always consistently, continuously improving. And the pursuit of continuous improvement is more important than any one individual win. Where this has materialized itself in like the technology industry, for example, it used to be the case that if you wanted to build and launch something, you would have to, you were expected to create this big, giant, ridiculous project plan with tons of spreadsheets and tables and Gantt charts. And the idea was you plan out the next 1 year in advance perfectly and everything gets delivered on the exact date or everyone's fired. That's basically how it normally was expected to go.
And it never went that way anyway.
It never went the way that you expected. Yeah. So that was one thing that people kind of messed up, I think, because nothing ever goes according to plan, right? You can create the best plan in the world, but nothing is ever going to go according to the plan that you put forward. It just doesn't work out that way. There's too much variability in work, and there's also too much variability in jiu-jitsu. So the idea was to move more towards the system of continuous improvement, also known as Kaizen, because again, this comes from Toyota. And the idea is you're building a process of just making sure that you're always continuously getting better no matter what. That to me is one of the super exciting things about learning jiu-jitsu is just building that kind of laboratory so you're always improving and always getting better.
Yes. And the Kaizen is like part of this, right? So the last part of it is this is just a structured continuous improvement because you're very specific around what is my process goal here? So what am I trying to achieve? What am I trying to get better at? And you're very specific around how you're doing that. But in that way, it's also, and then I'm taking small steps toward it every day. I think for me, the difference, because I work, again, because of my background, I always, in jiu-jitsu and in business, work with Kaizen. I was always, every day, trying to do something a little bit better. There where I feel the Kata framework helped me a bit was, if we go like 10 years back, I had a couple of training partners, female black belts as well, who had really good spider guards, and I didn't have a spider guard. And everyone I competed against pretty much had a good spider guard. I felt that I needed to have a good spider guard. So I was like, I am going to improve my spider guard. So continuous improvement. I started drilling spider guard every day. But I just wasn't getting there. And was I improving? Yes, I was doing small, very small, tiny incremental improvements. But in the bigger picture, I didn't really have a why did I want to learn spider guard in that way? Except that, well, everyone else kind of was, and it felt like I should, kind of thing. So my target condition was not, you know, specific enough around it, and my experiment and feedback around it was horrible because I wasted 3 months and I never got good at it because it just, you know, that we have variables in jiu-jitsu and some of them are body types and some of them are, you know, the way you learn or the way you understand things. And to this day, I do not have an amazing spider guard. I have an okay spider guard. I'm pretty good at teaching it, but pure, you know, double sleeve grip spider just is not my thing. And I spent way too long back then just continuously improving a spider guard that I just shouldn't have tried to go after as my A game. And I should have much sooner seen that, okay, this experiment of getting good at spider guard is just not working.
Yeah. That's something that a lot of people talk about here on the podcast, is just this need to make sure that, look, you're not just trying to clone someone else when you're setting your goals. Ultimately, we're all very different. And there are going to be some things, some techniques, some strategies that just naturally gravitate to you. And you ignore those at your own peril, right? That's just something to bear in mind. If you are ignoring what your body is naturally good at, I mean, that could be a hard skill cap for you at some point.
Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. So maybe just to recap, just for the listeners and for the people who are, I don't know, trying to work while they're listening to this, let's do a bit of repetition to make it easier. What are the four steps of this model again?
So the four steps is you start by setting yourself a long-term ambition or challenge. It has to have some parameters in it. So the parameters could be centered around what is it, but could also be centered around what are you willing to sacrifice to get there? How does it feel when you're there? Then you understand your current conditions. So what is your current process and your current way of working, your current way of training and doing things on the path to that ambition? Then you set yourself a smaller target condition that is on the short term. Let's say it can be everything from a few weeks to several weeks, but still something that's on a short term horizon. Again, that has to be parameter based. So this is where, in other terminology, you would put a process goal, but also an outcome goal. So the process that you have, the routines that you have around your training, for example, if you do it right and the stars align on that day, it should also give you the outcome that you want. Then you find out what is it that's preventing you from doing that today. So what's preventing you from following that way of working, following that process today? And you do experiments along the way to try and get closer and closer to your desired process and thereby your desired outcome.
Got it. Man, this is an awesome chat, Shanti. We're getting close to an hour here. Was there any closing thoughts or things you wanted to talk about which we didn't have a chance to bring up yet?
So much and so little, most. You can always want. No, I think this was just a very short introduction and overview to it, but I hope that whoever's listening got something out of this and maybe is a little bit curious at seeing how they can apply this framework to their jiu-jitsu, or maybe to another aspect, something they're trying to improve and learn.
Amazing. Well, hey, if people want to follow you or ask you questions, how can they go about contacting you?
Yeah, they are welcome to find me on Instagram at ShantiBJJ. ShantiBJJ. That's my own personal. And then my gym's is HiveBJJ. That's probably the easiest place to reach me.
Awesome. Well, hey, as I always do, I'll put those links in the show notes to make it easy for people. I'll also see if I can find some resources on the Kata framework and put them in there as well for those who are interested in digging a bit deeper. But in the interim, Shanti, thanks so much for coming by. Really appreciated this chat. By the way, just one more detail for those who aren't already familiar with everything we make. If you go into our show notes, you're going to get a link to bjjmentalmodels.com. That is where you can get access to every episode we've ever made, plus access to our awesome newsletter. We send out some great thought pieces once a week, as well as a link to premium. Like I mentioned, that's how we float the boat here. That's the main service we offer. If you're a premium subscriber, you get access to a library of audio courses with some of the best minds that we've got in the sport, talking about strategy, tactics, and concepts. You also are starting to get access to several new premium podcasts that we're launching. We just launched a new one with Jake Luigi, the host of Less Impressed, More Involved, one of the best jiu-jitsu YouTube channels out there. And of course, like I mentioned, you also get those awesome rolling reviews that we talked about. So if you've listened to this episode and it resonated with you and you're looking for that laboratory workshop, you're looking for someone to help troubleshoot your game, premium is the best way to do that. There's a free trial, so you can check it out at no cost. Again, just go to bjjmentalmodels.com to do that. And I'll put a link to all of that in the show notes in case you missed it. But Shanti, again, one more time, thanks so much for coming by. I thought this was a fun one. It's always nice to talk to people who work in similar industries to me because we've got so much in common, and it's just, it's interesting to hear other people kind of come down the same path that I came down as well.
Yes, for sure. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to get to talk about this.
Most welcome. And thanks to the listeners as well. Always appreciate hanging out with you folks every week. We'll talk to you next time. Take care.